The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and it's great you could join us. So tonight, I am looking forward to having a good old natter with two women who also like to talk. So much so, they have set up their own podcast and it's on a subject that is right up the Parents Show street. Kate Patterson and Lucy Sutton, thank you for dropping by.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to come on.
So why don't you start by telling us what is the name of your podcast and what is it about and who is it for?
Yeah, of course. So our podcast is called Alpha Bites, and it's a podcast that dives into conversations about what is out there for Generation Alpha. And Generation Alpha is a generation of children born between 2010 and 2025. So children are aged between 0 and 14 at the moment. And it's about sort of how the future could look, how we can nurture this generation in the best way possible. And we interview people that are invested in this generation, experts and other people as well, with that aim in mind. So yeah, it's for anybody that is interested in that generation and the future of that
generation. Who are going to be leading us in the future. So yeah, we just felt it was so broad and there's so many people who are invested in this generation. There can be quite a lot of negative energy around this generation and the fear of what their future holds. And Kate and I just felt actually let's create something that's really positive, because this is happening and there's no point heading into the future with a fear hat on. So yeah, like Kate said, so anybody that's invested in them or doing anything towards their futures, that's who we get on the pod.
So remind me again, the age group is?
So it's children that are between 0 and 14.
0 and 14 currently. They're the Generation Alpha.
It's this next generation, yeah.
Yeah, and so what is so special about this generation that makes them different to maybe our previous generations or groups of generations?
They've been entirely born, they're entirely born in the 21st century. And with that, they are digital natives, really. They've been born into this digital world, which is so different to any of us. And it's advanced so quickly. So it's really hard, I think, for us to even understand what it's like to be a child in this generation. I think it's really easy for us to want them to be brought up the way we were, but that's impossible. So the pod also addresses, as parents, how are we navigating this when we don't know what it's like?
You're so right that it's an amazingly huge difference, isn't it? That they have been born into a digital age. You know, there's us, you know, not even, I didn't have a mobile phone till I went to university, spilling my age there. But, you know, now I have a 3-year-old and I'll hold my hands up. He's got a tablet, you know, and he watches, you know, we use digital tools for education and for entertainment. It's a totally different mindset. Why did you guys in particular find this area interesting? Have you got any alphas yourself?
Yeah, I mean, we cross over on so many levels. We're both teachers. So
got it.
Both primary teachers. Kate's run a tutoring company. She can talk about that in a minute. But we met on the playground as mums, but we happen to both be teachers. We now work together with Kate's business and... Yeah, so we were ending up, every time we would meet to talk about work, we ended up just talking about this generation and how unique they were and what was difficult in the classroom, what the challenges were, what the exciting things were. And we wouldn't get any work done.
I know. And also parenting as well. So
and parenting,
those
yeah.
two, you know, angles, like the educating, but also parenting as well. And obviously, we're a different generation, like you were saying, our childhood's very different. And that's something that is coming up quite a lot on the podcast. It's interesting about how we're almost having to reparent ourselves and we're that sort of guinea pig / trailblazer generation. So lots of chats about that.
And over loads of coffees, we made a joke and I said, I reckon there's a pod here somewhere, because if we can't stop talking about this, then surely everyone else is having these conversations or wants to have these conversations. Then Kate, with her entrepreneurial head, gets a glint in her eye and a few months later goes, should we do that pod? And I was like, oh, okay. But it took a long, long time from an idea, didn't it? Because we didn't know anything. So every step was a hurdle. And at points, we'd look at each other and think, can we really do this as well as our jobs?
Talk about having to have a growth mindset.
Yeah, I mean,
which we talk about with these children all the time.
It was a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
And it still is.
That's kind of what it is, isn't it, for us with the technology, you know, unlike this generation out, but we're like, yes. Oh, we'll do a podcast. I mean, personally, I suffer the same, going, I don't know how to do it, but all the kids seem to be doing it, you know, and they can do it with their eyes shut. And we, you know, we are learning as well. We're following them in many ways, in many of these technology tools. So your teachers and parents, how many kids have you got between you?
Lucy's got three.
Three girls.
Three girls, and I've got a girl and a boy. So five Gen A's.
Wow. And classroom full.
And a you classroom guys. Full of Gen A's.
And
yeah.
a classroom full of Gen A's.
So why not throw a podcast in, eh?
You know,
keep life busy. Yeah.
And it's really interesting because actually not only have we got our own, the classroom, but it's really interesting because you also then get an insight into how parents are parenting because you get a really broad spread because you get to see. And it's been a really interesting journey and it does give us a lot of content on the pod because you have got this broad, it's not just us and our parenting style. We've kind of got exposure to so many different parenting styles of that for that generation.
Yeah.
So and the trends that are happening and...
Yeah.
So parenting generation alpha, tell me about that because there's obviously the kids themselves, but the parents parenting them, what are these different trends or how different is it to how maybe we were brought up?
Well, we've had a couple of psychologists on the pod, haven't we, and parenting coaches, and they, the way that we are living our lifestyles is so busy that it's just impacting not only our nervous system, but then that's kind of then impacting the children's nervous system. So we're all living at quite a heightened state. So there's definitely a lot, you know, an increase in anger and anxiety and children struggling in situations that less children probably were when we were children. Not taking away mental health, that's always been there. But I think our lifestyles have exacerbated situations. And a lot of the guests we've had on the pod who are parent coaches have said, you know, look at your lifestyle and think, is there anything you can remove that is going to reduce the heightened state of the nervous system in the family? Because we all have weekends. We were saying yesterday, weren't they, one of our lovely guests, and she was saying, you know, if you look at your weekend and you go to a children's party, they've got a drama club, then you've got people coming around in the evening to watch Strictly or the Euros or whatever. And all of a sudden that child has been nonstop with no downtime. Whilst most children, that probably is okay. 30%, she was saying yesterday, which I didn't know, of Gen A's are highly sensitive children and they can't cope with that. So you've got 30% of children really struggling with those situations. So she said it's, you know, always take that inward look at your family. And I think we all know that, but do we actively practice it?
Yeah. And actually,
and then why do we not block it out? What's the word, Kate, that we was talking about?
FOMO.
FOMO.
That's what I was just about to say. And we were talking to a psychologist, weren't we, who lives locally actually in Burko, Susie Redding. And on the episode that we've got with her, she talks a lot about FOMO, you know, the parent load, but that FOMO and how that drives us to, we don't want our child to miss out on something. So we'll book up a club or whatever it is. And actually we're overloading them. And it's a crazy thing, but obviously social media doesn't help because then you can see what's going on. You can see what people are doing. So,
well, that's it, isn't it? Because, you know, I definitely as a child would go to some clubs and do lots of activities. But I think as a parent, you are seeing all the time on everyone's stories on Instagram, on their Facebook. Oh, look, they've done that. Oh, God, they found that new farm that's got really good outdoor play area.
Really good.
Oh, no, I better take him there because I'm absolutely ruining his life that he hasn't been in the ride-along tractor over
there. I know,
there.
Well, the good example.
I mean, the irony is it would probably be some fancy reel that you're watching of this farm, but actually they probably had loads of meltdowns and the day was not how it's looking as well. So you've got that filter as well. So it's a crazy time we're living through, right?
Filters are real.
If you haven't taken your child to see Taylor Swift, then you're failing at parenting.
I know. And actually, Susie Redding, who's a friend of ours as well, a psychologist who was on the podcast, she storied loads about
Taylor Swift over the summer and just kept, you know, just kept saying, you haven't failed as a parent just because you haven't gone to the Taylor Swift concert. There are other things you can do. And she's really reassuring like that. That's so helpful.
But you're right that this FOMO kind of feeling that we have as parents maybe isn't helpful for our children. Maybe we are pushing too much. Maybe we are overloading. But it's very hard, isn't it, when that noise is coming in from every angle to really filter that down.
Yeah, the noise. Yeah, that is something that's come up again as a topic. It's just learning, like you say, to filter out that noise. And it's having strategies, I think, to do that and to be able to stick, you know, almost setting boundaries as a family together, as a team, deciding what you will do, what you won't do, what you're going to take away, and just sticking to it and just having that kind of mutual agreement. I think it's having those strategies.
And I think, we've spoken about that with the technology side, because obviously that's a big impact. And the Smart Free Phone Childhood Initiative is hopefully going to help parents get the strength to make those decisions as a family about how they want to include sort of technology in their lifestyles and the phones. Once you've made a decision as a family, really sticking to it and getting the child to understand why you've done that, and it is for their benefit. It's not just, so it's a conversation with the child so they can really understand what are the repercussions. I speak to my eldest a lot about mental health and the impact of phones, because so she knows I'm doing this to protect you. It's not because I don't want you to have a phone. It's because I want to protect you like I protect you with your health, your physical health.
Mm. Tell me about that smartphone initiative that you just mentioned there, just so the listeners might be interested to know a bit more about that. What's that?
Well, actually, the two ladies that started that movement, the smartphone free movement, we're going to get them on the podcast, aren't we, Lucy? We've reached out to them. We'd really love them to come on because, I mean, it is such a hot topic at the moment, right? And so many things are happening. And I think St Albans has been quite pioneering with that as well. I think the last I heard, and I might not be accurate with this because I'm not sure, but 30 schools had signed up to be a smartphone-free school. And I think it's starting in Berkhamsted, where we live. I think Berkhamsted School
has, it's drip-feeding in, and they've got huge WhatsApp groups of parents who really want to adopt this.
Yeah.
So we're on the threads, and you can see all the schools that have really signed up to this. Some schools have signed up and not actioned it and said, we are a smartphone-free, because there's a lot of evidence, I think, that they want. There is some parents really want their children to have a phone. You know, it's not that all parents don't want them to have a phone. Some parents actually do want their children to have a phone, but I think it's trying to encourage parents, they can have a phone, but they don't need a smartphone. Because it's not the phone, it's the smartphone.
I think it's gaining traction because, like, recently Drew Barrymore was talking about it on Instagram. So, like, celebrities now are talking about it, and it's coming more to the forefront, I think. And Jonathan Haidt, who you can explain about him because you know lots about him, don't you?
Jonathan
Haidt,
talks
a lot about
He talks a lot about the generations and how each generation, the history of the smartphone technology that evolved and how it impacted each generation. He was saying, you know, millennials, you're okay. It came into your life when you were an adult and you had already been through your adolescent years. Yeah, you might have a few mental health issues now, but the bulk of your life has been okay. So it won't impact you. And it's really powerful, the statistics he's got. If you watch any of his YouTube clips or read his books, I would urge any parent that's on the fence about whether to buy their child a smartphone to look at anything from Jonathan Haidt, and you'll immediately have your answer.
How do you spell his surname? Because that's Jonathan.
It's Haidt, isn't it?
Yeah. And his book is called The Anxious Generation.
Well, right. That does sound fascinating. I do worry about that as a mum. When do you give kids smartphones, or should you give them smartphones? It's so, so tough. And it's something that makes, I know, a lot of parents anxious, as well as the children who are then dealing with the situation.
Just to go back to that point, Jen, I know that what you were saying about lots of parents getting anxious, I can get on my high horse with this one, but I think if a parent is anxious about it, the answer is no. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it is causing you anxiety about the thought of giving your child a phone, why are you even considering it? And most of the time, it's because they're going to be socially different from their peers, and that's going to have knock-on effect, but it isn't. And this is what Jonathan Haidt talks about a lot. That is going to cause them, and I can talk from experience. I've got a daughter who has just started secondary school.
she says, "Mum, I'm the only one." Of course she's going to say, I'm sure she isn't the only one without a smartphone, without a phone. But she's definitely, you know, one of few who haven't got a phone. And when we were going through year five, I think, is when most children start to get them. She was adamant that this was going to be a problem. She has totally moved on and couldn't care less now.
Wow, so, really? That's fantastic to hear, because you don't hear that side of thing. You just hear that it's caused World War III in a family and it's a disaster.
And it will for the short time, but it's what wars do you want to fight in the long term? It's a really, that's a really short war, considering what impact, what, how much you're going to be fighting when they won't put the phone down at night when some bullying incident happens. She said, I love it, because every time there's a talk at school about problems with mobile phones, I just sit there knowing that it's not me.
Wow, that is such a relief, isn't it? That must feel like such a relief for her. Like, I don't have to deal with that.
She is. I'm making her sound like an angel. Obviously, this conversation does come. And that's what goes back to those family values. Just decide as parents what you want and stick to it, because it only takes a family at a time to make a change. And that's what this smartphone-free agenda is. If five families make that decision, that will impact another five families, which is 10. That impacts another 10 families. And it's just got, the balance has just got to tip so more aren't than are. Not everyone's going to get rid of smartphones, but if the majority are with just a traditional phone, you know, old traditional, our old school phones, then that's going to help this generation.
And to be honest, some of us could do with just having a... Because I tell you, I do not need to be fed more social media. So this generation as well, then, what other big differences are there that we should maybe be thinking about for their future? Because I did listen on some of your podcasts, you mentioned about education and future jobs. And what blew my mind is when you said that some of their jobs are jobs that we can't even comprehend being invented yet, because they are going to be so different to what we do. So maybe tell me a bit about education and jobs for this alpha generation and what you're learning as you do your podcast.
It's a big conversation,
huge conversation,
so we can touch on it, can't we? But this generation are used to a bespoke world, aren't they?
Yes,
everything is bespoke to them, and I think a lot of children struggling in the classroom is because it's not bespoke when they step through the classroom door.
What do you mean by that? That they're used to a bespoke lifestyle?
Well, when they're playing games at home, everything's just for them. It's their game. It's their kind of, they'll put settings on when they watch
with tech. Yeah,
but even with watching TV, when we were children, we could only watch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it was what was on at that time. But now they watch what they want, when they want, at the drop of a hat. So there's no compromising there, is there? Well, I want to watch CBeebies, so I will. Well, I want to watch Octonauts, so I can watch that at any point. There's no waiting.
Oh, yeah, sitting through those adverts, waiting for Inspector Gadget to start. They're not going through that pain that we used to go through, are they? I get it. Okay, so, yeah, everything is at their fingertips, and then they go in that classroom and suddenly different rules. And is that a struggle, do you find, for the kids?
Yeah. It is a struggle. And also, Kate, you talk about the curriculum. And
I think that it's slightly different to what you're talking about, but in terms of education or the curriculum in schools, really, the curriculum in schools, I think it's quite subject based. It's a little bit outdated. The curriculum was updated in 2014, I think, and we're kind of due a new curriculum. It was designed sort of in a way that was it's very sort of old fashioned. And I think schools have been really creative, because obviously we have amazing schools, we have amazing head teachers, we have amazing teachers, been really creative to work with it in a way to sort of be creative and create amazing, engaging, exciting lessons. And think about, you know, you have those objectives in history, which are mainly about British history. So it is a curriculum that's outdated, not particularly relevant to the world that the children are living in, and also maybe not very diverse. So I think, yes, teachers and educators have had to be really creative to work with that and design lessons and experiences for the children to enrich them and to give them sort of outdoor experiences where possible, try and incorporate play. But in general, there's not enough play in schools. It's not creative enough. And I don't think this the skills that particularly this generation really need, life skills, skills like resilience, play, failure, mindset, all those sorts of things. And then obviously you're going on into secondary and it's the same.
Like, which we must say we're both primary. So we always are really careful to say we're not.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I can't speak necessarily.
Exactly. And every school is unique and different. So you can't generalise in any way. Mm. But just skills that they're going to need for the world that we're living in currently, but we're moving into too, to help them be prepared for, you know, like money mindset, stuff like that. Like, it's just thinking about, and we always joke, don't we? Because we say in Finland, they're doing this, like their education system is incredible. But actually, we did have a podcast episode before where we spoke to Kate Wadsworth, who is somebody championing play in schools and just trying to change things. She's a bit of a change maker to try and so children have access to more play. But she was sort of saying you can't, you know, you can look at Finland and it's an amazing model, but actually the UK is a very, very different country and our culture is very different. So it will take time and thought to think about how that could happen.
And we often say we don't know what the solution is, and that's what's really tricky. We don't have the solution, but we can see changes that kind of need to happen. I mean, the world has changed so much, and yet education hasn't really kept up at the same pace. So I think that's all it is. It's this shift in the landscape of the world, and the landscape of education probably hasn't shifted or been as dramatically changed as much as it needs to keep up. Maybe it doesn't. Some people argue it doesn't need to. So, you know, this is all, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But being in the school, it's a really packed curriculum. Yeah. It's really intense for this generation. They're assessed from the moment they start reception.
It's a lot of assessment, a lot of testing. You know, it's quite pressurised. And like we were saying earlier, the world is fast paced. And I think actually it's quite fast paced in school, just only because it's quite an overcrowded curriculum. Mm-hmm. And we just have to make sure we're covering all the objectives, you know? So it's,
And going back to that nervous system thing, I think teachers can feel their nervous systems on. Because there's so much to get in the day. And you think that energy is just then transferred into the children. You know, between, you're really speedy with transitions. Right, we've just done phonics. Quick, we've got to get our spellings done. Quick, we've got to have a snack because we've got to get to play. I mean, that's so unrelaxing. And I'm a teacher, like when we were at school, I know I try and keep it as calm as I can, but it's really hard.
And you're amazing. But I think when we were at school, you know, we might have done some maths or something. We'd go out for a play and we'd come back in and there'd be time to finish off. But I just don't think there is so much anymore. I mean, obviously you find time where you can, but it's on to the next thing, you know. But that's how we're living as well, isn't it?
So, that playtime, that downtime, that is when these children can absorb surely what they're being taught as well. They need time to process. They need time to breathe. And it's so important, you know, you are told that as a parent, before bedtime, everyone just needs to process and relax a bit just to let their brain settle into what's happened. That's when the questions come out, isn't it? When they start reflecting on something of the day.
And it's like you say, downtime, unstructured time, and it's so key, and play, and it's so, so important.
Yeah,
and
actually, exploration.
And that's why, because Lucy referred to my business that I set up in 2020, it's called Learn Happy. And I set that up initially, that was small group learning, just children coming together. And I just wanted to kind of create time and space for children, having been a teacher and having, you know, 30 plus children in a class, seeing those children that were, even then, which was a while ago now, were just struggling to keep up, or it was just quite fast form and they needed more time to work through something. So I just created like a small group setting. And then from there, it's grown. And we've got a learning hub in Berkhamsted, and I've just recently opened one in St Albans, which is really exciting. But yeah, it's becoming much more focused on skills now because it's kind of evolving with what I believe. And the sessions are actually structured around those life skills that we talked about before to sort of give children that support, really, and just help nurture them in that way.
So that when they go into the classroom, they feel equipped, you know, they've got that positive mindset towards learning, that can-do attitude. Because I think it's so easy for parents to say, oh, my child needs tutoring or needs a boost. And I think
it's quite different. Like I always say, we've turned the tutoring model on its head because I think sometimes maybe parents might associate tutoring with either my child's struggling and I need them to catch up, or, you know, I want to get them to this level, or I want to push them a bit further. But it's not about that at all. It's about just supporting them and giving them that kind of time and space and teaching them skills, but build, I mean, essentially
championing
building
them.
Confidence yeah. and championing them. And let it, and telling them what their strengths are. You know, just having that person that believes in you, because I think that's really important. Mm.
That is totally the opposite to how I grew up with tutoring, that I used to do tutoring for things that I was struggling with. As a dyslexic child, I'd have spelling extra, I'd have maths extra, because, and it was basically, I felt that, oh, it's because I'm not very good at it, I have to do the extra, rather than, wow, let's, you know, have a positive experience. It's an extra powerful tool I can have, you know, it's a boost rather than a bump up. But I do want to touch on just this idea of jobs, because that does blow my mind a bit. And so jobs for this alpha generation, the working industry at the moment for us adults is changing a lot. We are losing jobs to technology very fast as well. It's quite scary. But for this next generation, it could be a very different landscape. What have you been learning during your podcast about this, or discussing about this? Because I find it fascinating.
It is really fascinating. And like you said, like we've said before, you know, most of the jobs don't even exist yet. But we were talking to Nikki Elliott, who runs a podcast called Women's Business, and she had this lovely way of saying, we need to stop talking to children about what they want to be when they're older, because actually, lots of the jobs don't exist. We need to be asking them, what do you want your life to look like? And actually telling children that it is up to them, they can design their life, because it is so flexible now. You can work where you want to work. So if you've got passions that are by the sea, why would you live in the city? You don't need to anymore. So what do you want your life to look like, so that you're really coming at it from a holistic point of view and not letting your job can define you, basically. Your lifestyle can define you, and your job is part of that. And she said she went to a I don't know if it was a meetup, a conference, and there were some Zennials there, and she said the range of jobs they were doing was phenomenal, you know.
Gen Z,
there was some podcasters there. One of them was saying she was the PA to her husband, who's an influencer, and you know, all of the that's her job. So she said there were these really wacky things
going on. I think essentially, yeah, exactly.
Like, AI controllers.
I think we like to always keep it positive with the podcast, because actually we find it quite exciting thinking about the future for this generation. But I think the future world of work looks exciting. That's essentially it. And like you were saying, even Gen Z's jobs are kind of not on any of our radars. And there's so much hope for our kids who are just a generation behind them. So it's exciting. And the thought that they can design their lives around what they want to do. And there is like a real movement, particularly with like female founders at the moment, you know, entrepreneurs, where it's like, actually, I want to kind of design my life and my life and my work around my family. And it is starting to happen, which is amazing. And I think because of COVID as well, and like more working from home, it's a bit more balanced in some families where the parenting's more shared, like the husbands are more kind of hands-on, which is lovely. And the thought that actually, because like, we're not quite there yet, and I think often women, our friends that we talk to that are mums, they are doing a little bit more of the parenting, they've got more of the load, but the thought that actually it won't even be a conversation, maybe. I mean, that would be amazing for the future for them, where everything is more shared and it just looks, work just looks very different in every respect.
If they want to work.
If they want to work.
Well, yeah, I just think sometimes the movement can go so much the other way. It devalues, actually, if you want to stay at home and be a parent, that's also really great. Do you know what I mean? People almost feel that there's these freedoms to set up businesses can sometimes make women think, well, should I be setting up a business? Is it not okay to just be at home and be a mum? Is that not valued enough? And I think it's really important that women do feel that just because you're at home and there is it is accessible to create a business and be creative, you don't have to.
We don't have to do everything. Full stop, paragraphs of it. Amen. I think that's an amazing thought to say, instead of what do you want to be when you grow up, how do you want your life to look? Oh, God, it just makes my shoulders drop just saying it. Isn't it lovely?
I love that question, like, what do you want to be? Because, you know, you still hear it so much where, you know, parents or adults will say to children, oh, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Like, what, you know, what job do you want to do? And it's just like, it's like that defines you. And it's about so much more than that, isn't it? It's about your passions, about what you enjoy doing. And just that question, that the idea of just being asked, what do you want to be? I'd love
full
it
stop.
If my
full
daughter
stop.
Just said kind, like, you know what I mean? Like, not like, I want to be a doctor, or like, you know, it's just...
And also the way that we are now working, you know, a lot of it over the last few years is we're multi-career sort of workers now. And I can see that that probably is just the only way forward. You know, it's not lifetime careers and you get a clock and a party at the end and off you go into your retirement. You know,
that I love that. And that was very true of the baby boomer generation, but it's obviously changing now. Yeah. And yeah, just the thought. And actually, when I ask my daughter what she wants to be, she'll say, I want to, you know, I'd like to, she does talk about jobs a little bit because I think that she's still being asked that a lot, but she'll say like different things because she can see that actually we're starting to do that and we've got different interests. It's just that multi-passionate thing, like you said, which I love. Yeah.
And they're obviously watching you guys, you know, mums, like being diverse, looking at passion. I mean, I think it's incredible what you guys are doing. Teachers, parents, podcasters, you know, business owners. I take my hat off to you. I really do. Look, it's just been so wonderful chatting to you both. I genuinely think it is a fascinating topic. And as a mum, I'm going to be tuning in because I think there's lots of things we've touched on today that feel like a tip of an iceberg that I would love to know more about. And if our listeners want to find you guys, tell them, where can they find you? How can they listen to you? Or if they had something they wanted to talk to you about, maybe, how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, of course. So our podcast is called Alpha Bites and you can listen to it on Spotify or Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, we've got an Instagram account, which is This Is Alpha Bites. So you can find us there. And yeah, reach out to us. We'd love to have a chat with you. If you've got something to talk about and you think that it's interesting for our listeners, we'd love you to come on the podcast. But yeah,
or any topics you are
any
covering.
Any topics you would like covering.
Yeah. We'd love to generate some more communication with listeners, wouldn't we, and hear what people want. But yeah, we're still in the kind of early stages, so we're hoping that will gain traction. But yeah, we'd love to hear from listeners.
And the smartphone-free ladies, we'd love you to come on the podcast. And we keep getting asked. Lots of our friends are just like, oh, we really want them to come on. So yeah, we'll be reaching out.
Well, it's just been a joy to chat to you both. Thank you so much for coming and talking to the Parents Show here on Mix 92.6. And yeah, do tune in, listeners, to their podcast. I think there's a lot we can all take away from it. I hope you guys have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for being with us. See you soon.
Thank you, Jen. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and I'm so happy you could join us this evening. Now, as you know, here on The Parents Show, we try to touch base with all different families, and the reality is sometimes life is tougher for some than others. So tonight, I'm delighted to be talking to two amazing women who've taken it upon themselves to reach out and help Hertfordshire mothers and families who need some extra support by setting up and running the charity Baby Bank Hearts. Ida and Dee, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jen.
Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I'm so thrilled to be talking to you. So, Dee, I understand you're a trustee of the charity, and Ida, it was you that actually founded the charity. Thank you both for talking with me. I'd love to know more about the charity that you run. In a nutshell, what is Baby Bank Hearts?
We are a voluntary organisation providing essential items and equipment to families across Hertfordshire who are facing challenging circumstances. Initially set up as a small project, we registered as a charity in February 2022 and now serve families across the county. Essentially, we rehome donated items with families in need. All of our donations, or most of our donations, come from local community who want to pass on the items to those who are going without. Our motto is, every child should have the best start in life.
That's lovely. Thank you so much, Dee. That really clearly explains it. Amazing. So you, for people who don't know a baby bank, you're basically reaching out to, is it mums, families who are in difficult circumstances who may need extra support? Is that right?
Exactly. So essentially, our baby bank offers support to parents who are struggling to source essentials for their children, families who are referred to our services who are on a low income, facing complex health issues, are victims of domestic violence, to modern day slavery and human trafficking. And also we help people who are like facing food and hygiene poverty, who have lost their incomes, people struggling with mental health as well as physical health.
Wow. That is a huge range of people that you are currently helping. Ida, how did this all begin? Why did you set up this charity?
Jen, the COVID-19 pandemic really shone a spotlight on the hidden pockets of poverty, especially for families with kids. And I was really surprised to see that in Hertfordshire. It was heartbreaking to see that so many struggling families, they couldn't even get basics. And personally, this hit home for me because I grew up going without essentials and dealt with tough times. And I remember how lost I felt without anyone to turn for help. So this is what inspired me to start a baby bank and to be that support for other families who are facing similar challenges.
That's incredible. And during COVID, you say, is when you started it?
Yes, it was. It was. I'm a mum of two kids myself, and I had some time to spare. And I started this little project from my own garage, and it grew from there.
When you say you started it from your garage, what were you doing in the beginning? What was the, you know, very first sort of shape of the charity? What were you doing?
So, I just started rehoming my own items that I no longer needed, and I felt it was a shame to throw them away. They were in such a good condition, you know, and this is how it started, essentially.
And then you felt and saw a need for more, is that right?
That is correct, yes. It became apparent, especially on social media, people were looking for food, people were looking for nappies and milk for their children. And I felt I can do something about it.
Wow. And you didn't just think about it, you actually did it, which is the main difference, Ida. I take my hat off to you. And then how did it grow? Dee, how did you come on board as a trustee of the charity?
I came on board because Ida was looking for people to help her with the charity, to, you know, build the charity. And I was just really in awe with like by Ida's passion for this and, you know, her go-getting, like, you know spirit of baby bank. So that's what kind of made me want to join on board. And obviously it's an absolutely fabulous cause. You know, it's helping to alleviate poverty within Hertfordshire, to also encourage recycling as well. So yeah, it's an amazing cause and Ida is just so passionate and amazing.
Oh, it does sound fantastic. And in a nutshell then, so what are you providing for these families or mothers who may be struggling in different ways?
So this could be anything really, from hygiene items, nappies, clothing, child equipment, even food vouchers. We refer them to food banks as well. And formula milk. This is the big one. Recently, it has gone up in cost. It cost almost £20 per tin of powdered formula milk. And so many families are going without, watering down their formula, you know, extending time between feeds. And we're providing that as well.
That's incredible. And whereabouts are you helping? Where are you based or where do you reach out to?
So currently we are storing our donations in Welwyn Garden City, and we also hold a drop-off session in Hatfield where anyone needing support can come in and speak to us every Friday between 12 to 3 p.m.
That's really important, actually. Just clarify that for me again. So if somebody is listening and thinks they actually could do with support, where do they go to find you on that drop-in?
So our outreach hub is placed in Friendship House in Hatfield, and we are open between 12 and 3 p.m. It's on Wellfield Close, AL10 0BU.
If somebody felt they could maybe come along and see you, what would they expect to find if they dropped by?
So they can expect to meet me or other of our volunteers, and they can come and have a chat with us, tell us what they need, and we'll do our best to help them. It's important to stress there's no need for referral if you are struggling and it's an emergency, or you're struggling for any baby items or children items for that matter. We support children from birth to 18. Just come in and see us and we'll do our best to help you.
That's incredible, because I do understand that for some people you help, it is through referral. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. We work with a number of referral partners in Hertfordshire, and this includes local council, women's refuge, schools, nurseries, food banks, NHS, and so on. And we have a simple referral form online where our referral partner completes it, requesting items needed, and then we take it from there.
That's amazing. And also, if anybody did want to look up what you did before maybe coming by, or if a listener is listening to this and thinking they might know somebody who could maybe benefit from this right now, you've got a website, haven't you, they could instantly look at just to get a bit more information. What's that website address?
So our website address is www.babybankhearts.org. You can also email us at info@babybank.org.
Amazing. It's just great to know how people get in touch with you, because I have a feeling people listening to this, it unfortunately probably affects more people than we know. Or we could instantly be thinking about people that could do it. Because I can't believe that stat that you just said about the powdered milk. That the cost of living is such a huge problem right now. We're all feeling the pinch, but when you've got a new baby or young child, it can really take a very serious turn if you can't afford the essentials. So I'm just so in awe of what you ladies are doing and that you've set this up. So you've been running for about, if it's COVID, and I'm thinking about 4 years then, and you said you've been a charity for two, is that right? In that time, did you have any idea how many families or mothers that you've helped?
So we have a number for the past 2 years, because we never thought we'll measure our impact, but we do now. And in the last year alone, we helped just over 2,000 families. And that's an increase by 1,000 families from last year.
That is jaw-dropping that you can reach out to that many people. And how has it been received by these families? You know, are there any stories or examples you'd like to share with us about how what you do has impacted some people?
Yes, Jen. Well, we rarely get to meet the families because we work with referral partners. But the ones that we get to meet, they do leave an impact on us. And I'll never forget the story of a mum we helped who was fleeing domestic abuse. And she arrived at Women's Refuge with nothing but her newborn baby and her child. And she was scared and unsure of what the future held for her. And we were able to provide her with essential equipment and clothing for her child, and I could just see the relief in her eyes. And a few months later, I had the chance to meet her again at a donation event. When she approached me, she had a warm smile on her face, and she told me just how much it meant for her that someone was there for her during such a tough time. And hearing her say that she felt cared for and that she wasn't alone really struck a chord with me. And this is why we do what we do, because everyone deserves to feel important and supported, especially when they're going through such challenging moments. And it was a powerful reminder of the difference we can make in someone's life, even just with a little bit of kindness and compassion.
I think it's incredible. And the difference you made to that one person and the fact that you helped 2,000 in the last year. But I can only imagine this takes work. This takes donations, this takes people, and it takes money. It's a fully volunteer-run charity, is that right?
Yes, it is, Jen. It is at the moment. Yes, we have 3 trustees on board and 7 volunteers.
But is it true that you could do with more? Do you need more help for Baby Bank Hearts?
Yes, we do, Jen. We are looking for trustees to join our team. So people with previous experience in a charity sector, fundraising, accounting, marketing, social media skills to help us to run and grow our baby bank.
So if any listeners out here were actually thinking about getting involved in a local community and you had any of those skills or just a passion to get involved, then becoming a trustee at Baby Bank Hearts is something that would be fantastic. And what else are you looking for to help you grow this charity? Are you looking for more general volunteers?
We are looking for volunteers, and it doesn't take a lot of time. It's only 2 hours a day that we ask for to help us to sort and package donations so they're ready to go to families who desperately need them.
So 2 hours a day. If someone had less time than that, could they still get involved?
Yes, absolutely. You can help us with social media, with fundraising online, anything like that is very welcome and much appreciated.
It's really wonderful to get involved in local projects. Here at the Parents Show, we always talk to such fantastic local charities who are really helping boost the community and support community. And this is exactly what Baby Bank Hearts is doing. It's supporting our Hertfordshire families and our Hertfordshire mums. So if you are out there and are thinking, look, I've got a bit of spare time, school holidays just finished, the kids are back, maybe this is something I could do as a mum. Maybe this is something that I wished was out there for me when I was had a young family. Then these guys would absolutely love to hear from you. And we all know time is precious. Everybody seems to be so busy with life at the minute. But even if you have a little bit of time, I'm sure Ida and Dee could really make use of any time you could offer. And I'm just thinking fundraising as well. So that's something that, you know, if someone was doing a fund run or wanted to do a bake sale or anything like that, is your charity something that they could maybe support?
Absolutely. We would love that. We have a Just Giving page. You can also reach out to us for our bank account details. We also hold a corporate volunteering event, which we have one coming up very, very soon. And we ask for small donation and for your help on the day.
So if you're looking for a worthy local charity for anything that you're running out there, any listeners, you could always be helping the local young families of Hertfordshire. And there was something else that you guys could really do some help with, wasn't there? Storage. Tell me about that.
Oh, Jen, our operation in a small storage unit is growing by the day, and we are looking to move into a bigger unit to accommodate our growth. And our goal is to create a warm and welcoming environment for our volunteers and referral partners and also families who are seeking for that support. And I'd like to appeal to anyone, any businesses who have a space to share, to reach out to us. We'd really appreciate a bigger storage unit.
At this storage, just to be clear, it's because these families you're helping, you're offered providing them with pre-loved equipment or clothing or new hygiene products, but you need somewhere to store all this. Is that right? That's what this storage is for?
That is correct, but we are also looking to grow. We are looking to open a pop-in hub where families can drop in and collect their items and pick items themselves. So it's essentially a shopping experience where you can pick what you want and need. So it wouldn't be just storage units, it's, you know, some nice and welcoming environment for families as well.
That is so lovely, because these are children we're talking about. It's not, you know, a side table you're trying to buy. If you're looking for a cot for your newborn, we all know that special moment if you've had a child of, you know, picking something like that out. And that is something that every mum should feel. They want to choose something to put their most precious, precious baby in. I think it's just incredible what you do. And your charity does rehome a lot of pre-loved items. Are you looking for people, if they have things to donate to you, can they donate to you, and how would they do that?
We are looking for items to rehome. However, we kindly ask people to reach out to us before dropping donations off, because our storage unit is so small and we have such a limited space that sometimes we have to put hold of accepting donations.
That's why a bigger storage unit is vital if this charity is going to grow and help more families. So I have a funny feeling our parent show listeners out there might just know people who can help. They're a great bunch, and we really love to support local charities like this who are making a huge difference. Ladies, I can't thank you enough for joining us today and taking the time out to share what you do. Please do get in touch with them if you know somebody who might benefit from their support, or if you have time or premises that could help them. We wish you the very best of luck. I just feel you're going to go on from strength to strength. Thank you so much for joining us today. Speak soon.
Thank you,
Jen. Speak soon.
Bye.
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 The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.